Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. We have a very interesting program. Tonight we have Rabbi Shlomo Dickman. He's a mechaber of many Sfarim, and his newest sefer is Shadchanes and Halacha. How much do you have to pay, Shadchan? What happens if there's a dispute? What happens if more than one person read the Shadach? What happens if somebody read the Shadach and a year later they decide to get married, etc., etc., all the different iterations? We're going to have him on the phone talking halacha. We will have Rabbi Shaya Ostrow. He's the premier go-to dating coach in the Haredi world. He works with many different organizations. We're going to be speaking to him, and he has a very fascinating opinion. He says, there is no shidduch crisis. Let's hear his opinion. He's going to tell us that there is a marriage. There is a loss in the breakdown in the belief of marriage. We'll get to that. And then we will have Rabbi Ari Senter, who's the director of the Chaf Kei, the famous Kashrus organization. And he's also one of the founders of NASI, the North America Shidduch Initiative. And he says, no, there is statistically a Shidduch crisis, and we can make some suggestions as to what we can do about it. You can find all our programs at www.headlinesbook.com under the audio or podcast section. You can find us in our hotline. We now have North America's 806-732-806-8700. In Israel, it's 02-372-0304. In England, it's 330-117-0250. And we are also on Yeshiva World News. You can find us. This is your hour of learning Hashkafa Halacha. This week will be a little bit more Hashkafa than Halacha. We go back and forth. So I want to, last week we spoke about the Shidduch crisis. And we had on a very eloquent spokesperson who said that it's because mathematically there are just more girls than boys. And Rabbi Senter will take the same opinion. But Rabbi Ostrow has a different opinion, and I think it's a very important opinion, and I'd like to speak about that in the opening. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal last week by a Dr. Mark Regenor, and it was called The Decline of Marriage. And he writes how, in a startlingly short period, the last 15 years, marriage has gone down by 15%. People have lost their faith, the sanctity, the concept of an institution of marriage. People have, nah, what do we need it for? It's below 50%. Astonishing numbers. And why is that important? I'll tell you why that's important. You know, there is a Beis Halevi in this week's Parsha. Well, let me start with the Sefer Hasidim. There's a famous saying, Visa Christelzach Yudelzach, what happens in the outside world, ultimately we adapt to. It's really based on a Sefer Hasidim in Simin Aleph Kuf Aleph. He says, Kimoy Shenig Hanochrim, Kain Min Hagi HaYehudim, Berev Mekaymais, Kigayimim Hanochrim, Gedurim Barayas, Kachiu Bnei HaYehudim Haniladim Baisir, and Lehepach. We basically, the humans were very social. And we follow our surroundings. And the Sefer Hasidim is writing this 1,000 years before Instagram, before social media, before iPhones, before magazines, before newspapers, before he said, they had none of this then. He said, people copy. That's what we are. We're a social race. In fact, the Rambam writes in his famous thing about Avraham Avinu, who didn't, he said, we go, the Klal Yisrael believes, Yelech Lamidbaris, he says, don't copy. Avram Ivri, Avram was the original. He didn't, but we do. And the Beis Halevi takes it to really an extreme in this week's Parsha. Fascinating Beis Halevi, such a current Beis Halevi. The Pasuk says, Tyrus says, Hishkes kol basar estarkei ala aretz. He says, all basar, the animals became depraved in the time of Noach. So the Beis Halevi says, animals, they don't have Bechira. So the Beis Halevi says a startling thing. He says not only do our fellow family members, our neighbors, our community, our town, our city imitate us, he says our pets, our animals follow us too. So the Beis Halevi says it says that the animals of the Dor HaMidbar were nichshal in arayis, whatever that may be for animals, right? The Mishkav Zachar, etc. He says, because what people do, not only don't other people copy, even all of world kind, all of the universe follows the lead of the one that was created as its center, as its nexus, which is man. Everything follows. So when we have the Wall Street Journal telling us that the institution of marriage is under attack, well, you know, I know a lot of boys and girls, they are married. They're married to their careers. They're married to the social media, internet, etc. They're married to traveling. They're married to their chevret, having a good times. What's the use of marriage? What do we need it for? That's the new call coming from America today. And I'll tell you something. You know, the Torah in last week's parasha says, Lo tov heyos adam levadai, esa lo ezer kenegdai. Let me make him a mate. Concept of lo tov. In all of my sabrashis, it says seven times tov, one time it says lo tov, by this. So what's the... Now, marriage, though, it seems like a really radical, crazy idea. I mean, I'm married for many years. I can tell you, marriage is stressful. Marriage is compromise. I can tell you, happy wife, happy life. That means compromise, right? Marriage requires humility, the ability to say you're sorry. Marriage requires cooperation. I really don't want to go there. Okay, honey, we are going to go there. So what do we need it all for? If we could have romance without marriage, if we could have relations without marriage, what do we need marriage for? It's a little bit crazy. And that's what the Wall Street Journal says. It's pre-Leitav Heyes Adam Levade. But think of what marriage does lead to. Marriage requires commitment. And you know what? Commitment makes you grow. What is a person without commitment? And I'm going to prove this to you. Because I don't want you to take anything I'm taking for granted. If I can't prove it, just erase it. Marriage requires responsibility. Yes. You can't come home anytime you want. You can't, you know, party, go to get... No, it requires responsibility. Marriage is a profound journey. And it's a journey into self-discovery, self-awareness. You know the story of the armed robber when he was brought to court. He said, they call it robbery, the armed robber said. I thought they were giving me gifts to celebrate the new gun I have. Well, guess what? If you're married, marriage requires self-awareness. Because if you're not aware, self-aware, your mate will tell you. Marriage requires transcending your personal ego. It's Surah over Chaimer. The question is, if marriage requires all of the above, why do it? So let me give you some statistics. Right? Here's a statistic. 97%, right? You could Google this, of Forbes 400 members have been married. Many have been widowed or divorced, but they were married. 97%. These are the high performers in the financial world. So you say, bah, it's the money guys. They like marriage. Okay. 98% of Nobel laureates are married. 98%. Not a typo. 97% of Forbes 400, 98% of Nobel laureates. And you know why? Because the same set of characteristic traits that allows a person to be successful at Nobel Prizes, at Forbes, and also for the Yeshiva Light, I would say 98% of Rosh Yeshivas are probably married. I did not do this statistic. I was just a guess, but the ones I knew were all married, right? Why? Because what does commitment do? Commitment makes, you know, vayeshech whisper. You have to, when you commit it, a different you comes out of it. What does responsibility mean? It means undertaking. Bending down, grabbing your life by its reins. What does self-awareness do? It makes you aware of your shortcomings, the need to fix them. Do you know that married men make, this is again Wall Street Journal, make 35% more than their unmarried counterparts? So what does that mean? Yes, marriage requires all of the above, but if you don't get married, I tell that to all the single guys out there, you will not make money. And I'm basing that on a Rav Gomer, Right, the Marshach calls a 97% would be a Rav Gomer. Anything over 94%. It's a very, if you have a 97% chance of something bad, that's not good. 3% chance that you will make money. 2% chance that you will ever be in the in other words, that you will be successful. You will not be successful if you remain single. I tell this to the guys. And I don't say this for religious reasons. The Forbes 400, Northern Nobel laureates, most of them are not religious. Many of them are total, just from a practical point of view. So here's what Rashi says about it. Rashi says on the Pasuk, Loi toiv heyes adam levade, esaloi ezer kenegdei. Rashi says, if he was zocha, nasaloi ezer. If he was zocha, she's an ezer. Loi zocha, kenegdei lehi lachem. Now we know Rashi's all Ruach HaKadosh. So Hashem is a Shatran. He comes to Adam Arishan and he says, I'm going to make you an Ezer Kenegdai. Now imagine somebody came to you and they said, I have a girl for you. But if you're Zacha, if you do what's right, she's going to be an Ezer. Loi Zacha, she's going to be a Kafta, she's going to be a witch, she's going to have her own personal set of brooms. I mean, would you be out of your mind? Would you do a Shidduch like that? Would you let your daughter do a shidduch like that? Your sister? Anybody you know? What kind of shadchan is this? Crazy thing for a shadchan to say. So the Mefarshim say a beautiful pshat. They say zacha doesn't mean if you're righteous, if you're winning, if you have it. Zacha means if it's an area where you're strong, nasoi ezer. You're wonderful with numbers. You could do books, numbers, better than anything. What does your wife know about numbers? What about an area where you're not so good? You're the genius with numbers, and you say, you know, I'm not so good with people. I think I could trust that guy. We don't have to put it in writing. And your wife looks at you, and she says, look, you could be very good about numbers. You don't know anything about people. Don't put it in. Put it in writing. Don't trust. You can also trust. Put it in writing and then trust. It's always good to do business with honest people because no document will fully protect you. But put it in writing, and then trust. That zacha, an area where you're strong, it's an ezer. Loi zacha, or the other way around. The guy's very good with people, doesn't know anything about numbers. He says, boy, sales are killing it. I says, did you go through the budget? So what does kenegdei lilachem mean? It's a yin and a yang. And that's why 97% of Forbes 400 billionaires are all married, because there's a check and a balance. There's 98% of Nobel laureates, it leads to self-awareness. It leads to understanding. Your eyes are open. No, they weren't giving you gifts because of your gun. I'm sorry. That's not why they gave you the money. Right? So that's a reason to get married. Simple olam hazeh. You want to live a better, more successful life. Let me give you one more reason to get married. You know, live life backwards. When my father had cancer, he was in Sloan, and the same time he was in Sloan, he stayed on the 19th floor. It was an upscale with private rooms, so he had a very interesting clientele there. One of the most famous Hollywood stars in the world was, if I mentioned his name, you would know it. My father was in the hospital off and on for many months. This person was there off and on for a few months. Every single day, my father didn't have 1 minute unattended, a child, a grandchild. There was 24/7, including Shabbos, somebody there. And the nurses remark about it. This Hollywood star either didn't have children, I didn't Google, or they weren't particularly interested in it. He didn't have a wife. And they would wheel him around the floor, an African-American orderly, Maddie, would walk him around. She was the day. I don't know who did it at night. I never saw him with a family member. So what do I say? Live life backwards. At the end, all those parties, what do they really produce? Will there be a joy of children, of grandchildren? So I'm giving you two good reasons, economic, Nobel, Forbes, and just common sense. When the Torah said, Loi toiv heyes adam levadei, the Torah really, really was setting forth what, you know, thousands of years later society has discovered. So we as a community have to re-embrace and talk to our children and talk to our friends about the sanctity, about the kedusha of the Jewish family home, of the value of marriage. And that's something that Chaya Astro said is sorely missing. Okay, without me going any further, let's go to our very interesting, fascinating guests. Let's start the program. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Ari Senter, who is the rabbinic director of the Chaf Kei. He's also one of the key supporters. The Chaf Kei is one of the key supporters of Nasi. He's also a Rav in Wesley Hills. He's the Rav of Kehillas Yesharim. Welcome, Rabbi Senter.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to join you on this program.
So, Rabbi Senter, tell us about the so-called Shidduch crisis, and I say so-called because, you know, it's reputed to be such. I can't say that I know it's such. Can you tell us what do you think is causing it? Do you agree do you think there is one, and what is causing it?
Okay, there most definitely is one, and I do appreciate actually the introduction. By using the terminology reputed or supposed, unfortunately there is a lot of misinformation, and I think when we see the actual information and see the statistics and understand what's causing it, we will be frightened by what is ahead, what are the statistical numbers. But, David, for us to do this, I think the best way is if you took out a piece of paper and we go through a certain mathematics. The mathematics is that contrary to popular belief, there actually are more boys than girls. Statistically, the Bar Yoyalim made it that somewhere between 104 to 106 boys are born for every 100 girls that are born. So in theory, there should be a Shidduch crisis in the other way. And that is the statistic that crosses all demographics. So if there are more boys than girls, then in theory, we should have a shortage of, we should have many unmarried boys, not unmarried girls. So the answer to that is the following. If you take statistics, is our population, and it depends on where, whether it talks about the modern Orthodox, the yeshivish, the Hasidish, or the numbers vary, but somewhere between growth is approximately 5%. The growth rate of Klal Yisrael is approximately 5%. So if you would go into a classroom...
Is that 5% annually?
Annually. So if we took a number somewhere approximately 5% annually. So therefore, that would mean for every 100 boys that are born this year, there are 105 next year. And leaving out compounding, there would be 110. Obviously, if you compound it, it would be slightly more. But for our purposes, take that number, year one, 100 boys, or 105 boys, because there were more boys, and 100 girls in the year 2000. We'll take that as the starting number. Year 2000, for our demonstration, there are 100 girls and 105 boys. Now, those 100 girls are going to wind up now basically accumulate it and do the following. Those 105 boys are going to enter into the Shidduch at presently, assuming they're 24, they're going to enter into the year 2024, correct? There will be 105 boys entering. But since we're compounding the girls in year 2001 will be 105. The girls born in 2002 will be 110. And the girls born in 2003 will be 115. Obviously, a little bit more because of the compounding. But now if those girls are entering into the Shidduch, and let's go even further, 2004 is 120. So if those girls are also entering at the age of 20 into the Shidduch, there's going to be 120 girls that are entering into the Shidduch arena, while there are only 105 boys. Because of this age discrepancy, the four-year age discrepancy, the 5% extra boys that are born made don't compensate for the extra 20 that are born. Did you follow the mathematics?
Yeah, but you're starting at year zero. Remember, year minus one, right? There were also 105 boys. There were actually 100 boys to 95 girls, and those boys are also dating, and they're dating. They're dating these girls as well.
Correct, but using our example, if you would go to the year 2025, there would be 110 boys joining, and there'd be 125 girls joining. There'll still be that 15% discrepancy. As long as you have the age discrepancy of joining into the arena of dating, of a four-year discrepancy, you will always be having the boys entering at a ratio of 105 and the girls' ratio at 120, which means as long as it's running in that parallel universe, that the boys are 4 years older than the girls, if that's the universe as they enter into the shidduch scene, we'll call it, the example that Moshe Pragro is the head of Nasi calls it is, let's call it an island. Let's make believe that we put boys and girls on an island. And it doesn't matter, boys marrying older girls, doesn't matter what it is. If every boy that gets into the arena goes on an island, and every girl that goes on an island, and as they get married, they come off, well, it's very simple. If you're putting more boys every year onto that island than you are girls, by definition, there are going to be girls that are, sorry, if they're putting more girls onto that island than boys, because the girls are entering earlier than the boys, then for all intents and purposes, you're going to have girls left on that island. So as long as we are doing it with a four-year discrepancy, we are risking of having 12 to 13% girls not getting married.
You see, Rabbi Santa, the only part of this that I don't understand is that, remember, you have, let's say, this year you'll have 120 girls entering. There's only 105 boys. But it's not just this year's boys who are entering. It's the boys from year before, 2 years before, a year later, and all
you're
those
correct.
Extra boys are.
But they're not. Let's think of it. Let's take from a point zero. You're right in theory, but I understand what you're saying, because at one point in time there were more boys. But since every year that we're going forward, there are more girls statistically entering than boys. You're right. In theory, you have a reserve, like you pointed out. But if every year 15% more girls are entering than boys, just based on the birth rate, it eventually catches up. You're right. When you started from point one, year one, maybe 20 years ago, you were correct. But as we continue to accumulate at this ratio, it just, by definition, mathematically works out that way. And if you go to any Beis Yaakov, you go into, we both live in Muncie. If you go in and take the amount of boys that are in first grade versus the amount of boys, in fifth grade and take the girls in first grade, there are more kids. Every one of our schools are adding classes in the lower grades. Why? Because the lower grades are greater in number than the upper grades. By definition.
So what solution does Nasi suggest?
Nasi's suggestion is to close that gap, which means either A, to bring boys younger, so then there are more boys entering onto this island, into the arena, and perhaps perhaps having girls wait a little bit longer. The longer you the closer you close the gap, then the numbers are different. Now, we're using a birth rate, growth rate of 105. Now, the proof, let me just, for discussion purposes, the proof that this is the mechanics, in the Hasidic world, the Shidduch crisis is the reverse. Since within the Hasidic world, it's very common for boys and girls to both get married of similar ages at around 18, so you don't have the discrepancy. And since the burial made it that there are more boys, so in the Hasidic world, there is a common challenge of there are unmarried boys. And we'll call it in the YU modern Orthodox world, the birth rate might be a little bit lower. Since the birth rate might be a little bit lower, therefore the age discrepancy, the cumulative of year difference doesn't make as much of a difference. Also, I grew up within the YU community. Within the YU community, girls are dating very commonly later in life. So then therefore also you have the gap is less, therefore they have less. They have the issue, but not at the same magnitude as, quote-unquote, the yeshivish world.
So it seems to me one possible solution is to have some Hasidic boys marry non-Hasidic girls.
That could help. That could help.
It would help Shalom Bias. So here's my question. Let's assume that these statistics are correct.
Mm-hmm.
And there is there's a few percentage discrepancy every year and it builds up. You want boys getting married at 21. I mean, boys are pretty immature at 21.
Okay.
And additionally, you want to have boys who are 21 marrying girls who are 20. The girls at 20 are pretty mature. So we're going to have an entire generation of where the girls are wearing the pants in the house. I mean, is this the solution?
Okay, I would respond to it like this. You're bringing up tremendously important points, and the challenge is that we have made our education system at times that maybe push our boys, many of our boys, to take responsibility a little bit later in life. The challenge is that this is perhaps the most pressing issue that exists within our community. Go into the homes of people in which there are older girls, older singles, in which it affects the entire dynamics of homes and hopes and aspirations. Now, yes, the solutions will be difficult, and the solutions will have other problems with them. But the fact that the solutions may have their own set of pratfalls does not allow us to just be afraid of addressing perhaps the most difficult issue that exists to our community today. And I do agree. We have pushing a 21-year-old boy who's not ready doesn't make sense. But if we at least open up the dialogue where beforehand we set up a structure in which the boys learn for 3 years, then go off to Eretz Yisrael for a year and a half, 2 years, then come back to Lakewood, go into the freezer. We've set up a structure that we're not even allowing for, let's assume, the 5% or 10%, whatever that number is that's capable of dating before 23, the more mature young men, we're not even allowing that to accomplish. We have to.
So when you speak, Rabari, when you speak to the Rashivas on Sea of Lakewood, what do they say about this?
Okay. The Rashivas have different positions. Some the Rashivas in Lakewood would definitely want, and if you see there are kolkaris from the Rashivas in America and Lakewood to advocate for boys to learn earlier. You know what? I'll give it, even though it's not 100%, I'll give a good halachic twist to it that maybe David Judah will appreciate is the following. And I think we have to get into a certain mindset. You know, where did Shimon Esther the Chuppah come from? So the Shulchan Aruch Harav said like this. Shulchan Aruch Harav said that really the Gemara says that they start learning Gemara at 15. 10 Mishnah, Gemara 15. And a person has to see, if a person ain't a Rai Simon Bracha for 5 years, so where did the 5 years come from? 3 years learning, and he said, of course you can learn for 2 or 3 years after Kail. He says, that the Gemara says, Rechaim v'tzaro v'yasek v'tar, is talking after 2 years. He says, a person, it's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch Harav and the Brisker Rav are both Macharish to the same Tarets. He said, where the 18 came from was 3 years before you got married, and then 2 years afterwards. If in the end we built into our mindset that, you know what, people, Kail entails Mesiris Nefesh, and it's not shot that once you enter in Kail, that suddenly now your learning is going to be so dramatically affected. Yes, it will be dramatically affected, that a person could do it Vidarach Kara, and doing it without, and that's what Chazal were looking for. Chazal was recognized, but we have to build in a certain measure, and I agree with you, pushing people who are not ready doesn't make sense. But on the other hand, those who are, and at the same time, maybe have a dialogue. Those who are capable of waiting a little bit longer, maybe pushing the age of the girls a little bit older, that's also a good idea.
But Rabbi Santa, let me ask you a question. The Shulchan Aruch says that a person should get married at 18, and if Avaral of Chafshan of Alaynasa, Hareza Oivar, Mavatal Mitzvah Saseh, right? And some say you could go as late as 24, the Yamshel Shleim, etc. What happened to this halacha? Like, why is Klal Yisrael as a whole mezalzel in, the Yamshel Shleimus, and there's a body of Paiskim that say that post-24, it's Tipach Atzmaisa, right?
Right.
Why aren't we, I mean, and I know Rechaim B'Tzavari, you have the other side, Rechaim B'Tzavari, but we're makbir on so many Isurim when the Rishonim, when you have great Achrayim that say post-24, you know, really bad things, what happened to that?
So I think there are two responses to that. One is the Rosh himself said that the Rambam brought in a concept of Oisiv Mitzvah, Potem Mitzvah applies even to Piriviriv. It's a big chiddush, but that's the Shittas Rambam.
And he doesn't put any time limit on it. Period.
The Rosh doesn't put any time period on it. The Shulchan Aruch Harav says when a person's Mila Kreisa B'Torah, that he's learned all Torah Shabbat, which, let's be honest, most of us, even longer into Kail, haven't hit that.
Right.
So there is this concept. However, with that still being said, we see the Paiskim don't advocate waiting for 24, 25. Now, I do agree. Times have changed. To push towards 18, you know, let's be real. The Berkei Yosef brings down, the Piskei Tshuva, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Geras HaKadosh, all the Paiskim talk about that. We can't. We have to be realistic that times change. And to look at and perhaps say an 18-year-old, let's push our 18-year-olds, that's not, nobody's advocating for that. In other words, the Chikrei Lev basically brought down the whole reason, why don't we do it at 13? So he wanted to say, because people aren't ready. So, David, I'm not disagreeing with you. We have to make sure, we have to address one issue by not making another. And that other addressing is for those who we are going to advocate for a younger age, they have to be mature and ready for it. Because that's why Chazal didn't push it. Now, as to why it's routinely being ignored, I assume they're relying on the rush. I assume they're relying on the Divrei Yatziv brings down, the Kleisenberger said, you know what, the Shulchan Aruch talks about kaifen, forcing people. He says, you can't force people. He says, it's just not possible. To push people, you can advocate. He says, he doesn't understand when the Shulchan Aruch talks about kaifen. He says, just, what do you mean? A person can't be forced to, he says it's not possible to force people. So we can't force. We can educate, and hopefully people, based on our education, will pick and make the right answers, the right choices.
Now, so, Rabbi Senta, last week I mentioned an idea, and boy, did I get a lot of nasty emails. I said, why don't we encourage shadchanim to read boys and girls of the same or similar age? So you don't have a 32-year-old boy going out with a 22-year-old girl, because he could be being ma'agin a girl who's 30. And communally, you know, there's a concept of arvus. Kol Yisrael arevim zelazeh. We see, Lamashal, could give you 100 examples in halacha where you see that in Hilchus, let's say, going to Minyan, right? The Shulchan Aruch says that if somebody doesn't go to Minyan, he's part of a community, he's called the Rasha. Why? Because it's anticipated that we do things that support ourselves communally. But one of the beauties of Klal Yisrael is the din of Arvis, which is why I can make Kiddush, even though I already was Yaisa, for somebody else, because my chiv is to see that he's Mekayim Mitzvahs. Why would an Arvis Mekayim, at least morally, it's hard to make a takana. We don't have the ability. We don't have a bezdin anymore. But, you know, why wouldn't we tell a shadchan, if you have an older boy who wants to go with a younger girl, it's not right to the other older girl who is maybe his ziva. Like, what do you think about that moral issue?
Okay, in that moral issue, I think, as opposed to legislating against positive reinforcement, Nasi has given financial incentives. It has advocated, there's a whole car program that in the event that you date an older girl, will pay for the rental cars. We as a people are amkshay, or if it's hard for us to legislate, which people say absolutely no, as opposed to if we give incentives that advocate towards saying, you know, we're going to advocate to this is a way to incentivize people to go ahead and close the gap. I'm going to give you an example, and if you think you got nasty emails, here's my idea. My idea that I've advocated was, I'm sure you're familiar with the idea of something called the freezer.
Of course, yeah.
Okay. So now what would happen if we went ahead and said like this? The first three girls, let's say the freezer is 6 months. You know what? The freezer is 9 months, but between the month of 6 and 9, you can only date girls 21 and older. If you did that, you'd put the 21-year-old girl at an advantage as opposed to the 18, 19-year-old. And all you're just doing is giving her 2 months in which the boys are what's it called.
What did the Rosh Yeshiva say about that?
No, that's something. I'm not on the immediate dialogue with the Rosh Yeshiva, so I can't really answer that question. I think the truth is what's most necessary is not necessarily my individual ideas or even Nasi's most individual ideas. The most important thing is that people have to sit down, recognize the magnitude of the problem, and ask for ideas. Not necessarily are my ideas the one. So I think the real answer is as we approach our Agudah convention, as we approach all the different conventions, we have to stand up and say, Rabbi, say, this is something that we can no longer ignore and claim to be fake news. of our term. No, this is real news. This is real statistics. This is real problems that there has to be real life solutions to.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Ari. That was very well said. And as the Agudah convention is coming up, I suggest that maybe, you know, they see this as a real time, real life issue that affects and breaks and breaks so many people. I think I strongly agree with you. Thank you very much for your time.
I appreciate tremendously your time. Thank you. Thank you. And again, David, it's your zchus and your responsibility to bring these issues to the forefront.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Ari. Kol tov, good to you.
Bye-bye.
We have on the phone with us from Lakewood, New Jersey, Rabbi Shlomo Dickman, who wrote a sefer, Shadchanus Bahalacha, which to my knowledge, it's in English. It's the first sefer written either in Lashon Kodesh, either in Hebrew or in English, on the very complex matter of Shadchanus, paying Shadchanim, how much to pay them, who gets paid, etc. Welcome, Rabbi Shlomo.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be with you.
So, Rabbi Shlomo, I was asked the following question by a shadchan here in the Muncie area. He said, they did a shidduch. The boy paid them, he was paid by the side, a total of $360. And ironically, by the way, they did get divorced afterwards, this couple. And the way it came up, as we were speaking about this couple, she said it was the lowest she was ever paid for a shidduch. Now, what is the fair amount to pay a shadchan?
Okay, so well, this person that paid $360 for a shidduch, assuming the shidduch was done completely by one shadchan exclusively, definitely underpaid the shadchan. The general guidelines for how much has to be paid depend on numerous factors. Depends on the place, and it depends on the people involved. For example, there are different places that there's different range of shadchanis. This minig of depending on the place is a minig that goes back hundreds of years. In Europe, it's clear all the Sfarim speak out that there were different places gave different amounts of shadchanis, and every person had to pay shadchanis based on his place. The minig in Europe was also that it depended on the person. People that were richer paid more. People that were poorer paid less. The way that it was done was that the payment was based on the dowry. The amount of the dowry, a small percentage, some places 2%, some places 3%, some places even up to 6%. Whatever the dowry was, that a percentage went to the shadchan. The purpose of this was to ensure that the richer people gave more and the poorer people paid less. Now, obviously, we don't have that exact system nowadays. We don't, you know, have a large dowries and we don't give shadchanis based on dowries. But the minhag has continued that people that were of more means give more shadchanis, lesser means give less shadchanis, and again, all depending on the place. Different places, richer communities in general, they give more. Other communities give a little bit less. Now, to give an exact number, obviously, is impossible. It depends, like I just said, on the place and the people involved. But based on what I've heard from many different shadchanim, the minimum in any place, by any means of people, is $1,000 per side right now. Meaning years ago, obviously, it was less. With Shem one day, it'll be more. But right now, the minimum, beer minimum, any place is $1,000 per side.
That's $2,000 to the shadchan in total as the minimum.
Right. If one shadchan did both sides and was the only shadchan exclusive on the shidduch, the minimum they should be getting is $2,000.
Reb Shlomo, let me interrupt with the following question, and I think I know the answer, but I want to hear you say it. One telephone shidduch, somebody said, boy, I have such a nice boy for your daughter, and they read the shidduch, and the boy called, they go out a few times, whatever the number is, and they get engaged, and the shadchan, they say, okay, it's $2,000 is the minimum, and they say, wait, it was only an hour of work on your part. How would you respond to that?
Right, so this does happen occasionally. And the answer to that is, part of what we pay shadchanim for is not just for the successful shidduchim. It's for the unsuccessful ones as well. The minhag that we have nowadays is that people don't pay for unsuccessful shidduchim. Very often the shadchan can work for days, weeks, months, hours on end, and at the end the shidduch doesn't go through successfully. And he doesn't get paid a penny. So that's always how the system has been. So part of what we pay the shadchan for the successful shidduchim is also to incorporate all the troubles that they put into the many shidduchim that were unsuccessful. Most shidduchim that are read by shadchanim, even the best shadchanim, most shidduchim are unsuccessful. And therefore, the system is set up in such a way that sometimes they do get lucky and get an easy one, but it took them many, many other shidduchim, unsuccessful shidduchim, till they got that successful shidduch, so that all goes into account.
Now, what do you happen when the shadchan goes the other way? The person, they do a shidduch, and the shadchan says, no, I won $10,000. Like,
okay.
How do you resolve that?
Right, no, so,
what's,
again...
Or $20,000,
really,
like,
right.
How do you figure, you know...
Right. So really, the common practice in America now, which unlike Eretz Yisrael, is that before a shidduch, we don't say the shadchan doesn't say a price. They don't demand anything. In Eretz Yisrael, it's not like that. Shadchanim are very clear. Many shadchanim, I don't know all, but many shadchanim in Eretz Yisrael, they're very clear and upfront, and that's an excellent thing to avoid machloikis. I bring in the sefer, the Chafetz Chaim says, he's not talking about shidduchim, but he says in general, whenever you're dealing with a worker, you should speak out clearly beforehand what the price is to avoid this problem of having a machlokes later as far as the price. Unfortunately, the common practice is not like that, and that leads to your question where people, either someone's going to be unhappy, the person that has to pay too much or the person that's not getting paid enough, someone's going to be unhappy. But the common practice is not like the Chafetz Chaim says, and we don't specify before. So in the case that you just said, generally the halacha is that if a price was not specified before, they only have to pay the minimum that's accepted to be paid. And therefore, like I told you before, if in a place where the minimum is $1,000, and these people, you know, they're not well-to-do people, they would only have to pay $1,000. The fact that the shadchan says he wants $10,000 is irrelevant. He should have said so before. However, there are shadchanim that it's well known that they are high-priced shadchanim. It's well known that they don't take minimum. They won't do a shidduch for $1,000. They do shadchanim for five, or shidduchim for five, or $10,000. If that's the case, and the sides knew that this is a high-priced shadchan, they knew that this person usually expects to get paid well, then they would have to pay him his fee.
What would be the halacha in that case if the shadchan, this high-paid shadchan, was approached by one side, and they pick up the phone, and they call somebody? That person didn't call the shadchan, didn't hire the shadchan called them. Would that side have to pay the minimum, or would it have to pay what that shadchan usually charges?
Again, what was the case exactly? The shadchan called
Ruvain,
up.
Ruvain approaches the shadchan.
And he says, I want you to find the shidduch for my daughter.
A high pray shadchan. I want you to find the shidduch for my son or daughter.
Right.
That shadchan says, I know somebody. And they call up Levi, right? And says, I have a shidduch for your son or daughter. And Levi says, okay, they do it. Now, Levi didn't approach that shadchan. That shadchan, the high pray shadchan, approached Levi. So when the shidduch is done, so Ruvain turns to the one who approached him and said, I want my high-priced fee, $5,000 per side or $10,000 per side. Then he calls the other side, and the other side says, wait, I didn't hire you. You came to me. In that case,
right.
And the other says, wait, you should have known if you're involved with me,
right,
I'm high-priced.
Right, right.
How do you
right.
deal with a situation like that?
Okay, so you're talking, it's a very difficult question to answer. I'll explain to you why. You've hit on the most difficult issue in the entire, all the halachas of shadchanis. You hit the most difficult problem. And let me give a little background. There's two types of workers in halacha, not just in shadchanis, in general halacha. There's someone that's called a poyel. A poyel is somebody that I hired. And then there's someone that's called a yoyrid. He's called a yoyrid because it comes from the expression of a yoyrid l'stei chaveri, someone that went down to his field of his friend. Someone just sees that his field's friend needs to be worked on, so the Gemara discusses such a case. If the field was needed work, and it's normal to pay for it, even though the person was not hired, he was not asked beforehand to do the job, but since he did the job, he went down voluntarily, did the work for you, he has to be paid. That's called a yoyrid. Now, there are numerous halachic differences between a yoyrid and a poyel, and a regular worker. To give one example, a poyel, the halach is when you hire a worker, you have to pay him cash or the cash equivalent, credit card, check, something like that. You can't tell a worker, you had someone work in your store, and you know he worked on the fruits in your store, you can't say at the end of the day, okay, I'm paying you with fruits. That's the halach by a poyel, by a regular worker. A yoyrid, A yoyrid has different halachas. A yoyrid, you can pay shava kesef kekesef. Something that's the equivalent of kesef is like kesef. Something that's equal to money, it has the value of money, you could pay him with money. So that's the halacha. That's one example of the many different examples of a payel and a yoyrid. Now, in Shidduchim, you very often have, like the case that you just mentioned, you have someone that seems to be a payel, a shatkan seems to be a payel, but he got called up by the sides and asked, can you please find my daughter or son a shidduch? So he would be a payel. Then there's someone that seems to be a yoyrid. He called up out of the blue, he called somebody and said, I heard you have a daughter, I heard you have a son, I'd like to read them a shidduch. So it would seem that that worker would have a din of a yoyrid, and all the different differences between a payel and a yoyrid would apply to that person. And the truth is, if that would be the case, I would have had to write two different svarim, one for the shatkin that's a payel, and one for the shatkin that's a yoyrid. So, but the reason why it's usually not true is because many svarim say that although a shadchan calls you up out of the blue and starts on his own doing work with you and would seem to be a yorid, once you accept his work, once you say, okay, I want you to do this, I want you to do me, okay, get me this information, okay, yes, read the shidduch, at that point you already accepted him as your worker and he becomes a payel. Now, not everybody agrees to this, but most of the payeskim seem to hold like that.
So Rabbi Zechman, what would be the halacha if you have, it's not too, you say the minimum is 2,000, it's too well-to-do people. One guy's a doctor or a dentist, the other guy's a businessman, it comes to the shatran and they say, oh, we're paying you 1,000 each. What's the halacha then?
No, so again, like the amount that has to be paid, it depends on the people as well. If someone's a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, it's accepted that they would have to pay more.
How much is more?
So some places.
Borough Park, Flatbush, Lakewood, right. You're a doctor, you're a well-to-do businessman, what do you pay?
Right, I'll give an example. I live in Lakewood. A normal well-to-do family like you said, a doctor, a lawyer, the minimum would be at least $1,800 from each side. Wealthier people, if he's an extremely well-to-do, they pay the minimum would be $2,500. And in some places, already even more than that, 5,000. And I've heard even higher numbers than that by the super wealthy. It's not uncommon for the super wealthy nowadays to be paying $10,000 or even $25,000 for shatkanos. Now, again, that's obviously for the super wealthy, not for the average person. But there are people that are paying that much. But $1,000 minimum, that applies to the Kerlian Gulite, that applies to the Bnei Torah, the Rebbeim, those types. The well-to-do balabatim, they should be paying significantly more than that.
Now, if a boy or a girl have gone out for a very long period, I know one boy, he went out with 100 girls. Would an argument be made, hello, I'm the shatran who read you your final shidduch. Think of all the negative thousands of hours shatranim have spent on you. You should have to really pay up when you did your shidduch. Is there such an argument?
I've never seen in the storm anyone should make that argument. I have seen something a little bit similar, not exactly the same, that a boy or a girl, that there's something significantly wrong, meaning a physical defect, a deformity, or something like that, someone that's not mentally fully, a regular person, that some more difficult shidduchim, they should pay more. And the source for that in the old minhagim is in Europe, it was always understood that if the shidduch is from two people very, very distant from of 10 mil away, a significant distance away, so it's much harder to make the shidduchim, so they always paid double the shatchanis. That's what the svarim say. Or if there was a river separating between the two sides, in the old days it was very difficult to read the shidduch, you have to travel over the river, so you have to pay more shatchanis. So too the svarim want to apply it to a shidduch with a boy or a girl is there's something different about them that makes them a very difficult case. Your case where he just is very picky, that I have yet to see that anyone should say that should require him to pay more shatchanis.
Rabbi Shlomo, what brought you to write a sefer on shatchanis? It's a very interesting topic, and how did that come about for a man learning Baba Basra Yevamis to write a sefer on shatchanis?
Right.
What's the story?
So the story behind it is we failed to mention that the Sefer was written together with Reb Tzadik Katz. Reb Tzadik Katz is a well-known Shafkin in Lakewood and also a very Choshev Talmud Chacham. Reb Tzadik and I go back a number of years. We learned Bechavrusa in Yeshiva a while ago. And since then, we've always discussed interesting questions. And Tzadik, as a Shafkin, always had interesting Shaduchim questions, Shatchanish questions. Now, Tzadik, if anyone that knows him, is very Tmimistic and very Erlich as far as he's not in the Shidduch business for money. He's one of the few, he's a Shafkin that focuses primarily on Bnei Torah, even though that means getting less Shatchanis, but he does it L'shem Shemayim. And so too, he's always been learning the halachas of Shatchanis, and he got me involved, and eventually, we started off, working together on the Sefer, and we thought it would be a kunshus. We didn't realize how much there is on the topic, but it turned out to be an entire Sefer of different halachas. And also, we have in the Sefer many fascinating real-life short stories that we...
Share with us a fascinating story.
Okay, so I'll give you one of the most interesting ones. It's not one that puts Shatchanim in a good light, but of course it's a very rare case. There's one story that the Svarim discuss where a Shafkin read, a Shidduch, a boy and girl are going out. And during the process, the Shafkin gets a call from a rich balabas and says, I need a Shidduch for my son, and I'm willing to pay an astronomical amount. He offered, let's for example, $100,000 Shatchanim. Now, this Shadchan couldn't think of any girl that would fit for this, would be appropriate for this rich person's son, except for this girl that was already going out with this other boy. Shadchan's Yetzer Hara for $100,000 got the better of him. He called up the boy and called up the girl and told each side that the other side said no and that the Shidduch was off. He waited a few weeks and called the girl back and said, oh, I have a perfect Shidduch for you. And he read her to this rich boy. The Shidduch didn't end up working out. A little while later, the two sides of the original Shidduch bumped into each other, the father and the two fathers, and each one, commented to the other, why, we thought it was such a great Shidduch. Why? What happened? Why did your son say no? Why the other one said, why did your daughter say no? They realized that what happened, each one was shocked. We didn't say no. Others, we didn't say no. Each side was totally shocked. And when they realized what had happened, they, Baruch Hashem, both the boys and girl were still single and willing to continue with the Shidduch. So the Shidduch restarted, and eventually they got engaged. Comes after the L'chaim, they get a phone call from the original Shadchan, the Russia who broke off the Shidduch. And he says, Baruch Hashem, I'm very happy to hear that my Shidduch worked out. When will you be able to bring over the Shatchanis? And the question is, is he entitled to anything? Now, I think it's better not to say the answer right now. Let the readers read the question inside and then think for themselves, and then the answer is over there.
Let me share with you another funny story. There was a boy, he had a friend who he really didn't like. So he decided he was going to play a trick on him. So he read him a shidduch to a girl, and the guy gets dressed up with a hat and a jacket. He knocks on the door, and he had never mentioned anything to the girl, and he walks in, and he says, I'm here to take out your daughter. And the guy looks at him, and he says, My daughter's not dated. We weren't read anybody. And the guy turned purple. And the father realized that somebody had played a trick on this boy. So he came in, said, look, sit down. Somebody obviously played a joke, but let's talk a little. And he spent a half an hour. And he was inspired. He thought he's a wonderful boy. He said, look, it didn't work today. Come back next Sunday. We're interested. So Yitaka went out with the girl, and they got engaged. After they got engaged, a friend who had read the Shidduch calls up and says, I want you on this.
Yeah, we have that story in there a little different.
When is the Sefer coming out? I heard it's not out. When is it actually being?
So it's been sold on a very small scale right now. We're hoping 2-3 weeks after Yom Tovim, it should be in all the Svarim stores around. To get it out before Yontif into all the Svarim stores was a little difficult. So we wait until after Yontif. Hopefully within 2-3 weeks it should be available.
Everybody, Rabbi Shlomo Dickman, Big Talmud Chacham from Lakewood, wrote Shatchanis, Bahalacha, in English, all the problems, all the issues with Shidduchim. I hope you all get married quickly and you use the safe, you figure out how much not to pay. This should be the discussion by the Shabbos table, how much we have to pay our Shadchan. Thank you very much, Rabbi Dichter.
Amen. Thank you very much for having me.
Kulta, bye-bye. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Shaya Astro, who's a noted author on the issues pertaining to Shidduchim and marriage. He's written many books. He's a writer for the Yated. He's a relationship and Shidduch coach. He's a consultant for a number of Shidduch organizations, such as Binyan Adiyad. Welcome, Rabbi Astro.
Thank you very much.
Rabbi Astro, is there a Shidduch crisis?
The Shidduch crisis is alive and kicking. It's something which is growing on a daily basis because we've never experienced such a burgeoning number of people who are reaching their later 20s, 30s, and even 40s who are unmarried. And so it's a growing crisis.
And what would you blame it on?
There are innumerable issues. One obviously is that we live in a society where marriage is no longer seen as essential for life. That's not our society, but the society around us, alternative lifestyles and things like that. We say the Gemara says, "Oh, chavrusa or misusa." A person needs a chavrusa to stay alive. That used to be the case for marriage. Today, there are a lot of people who are married to their jobs, they're married to their internet, they're married to their gyms. They're married in many different ways, but they're not married to a zivug. So it's not considered a person can lead a very, quote, normative lifestyle without being married. So they can always put off marriage as a something when the right person comes along. It used to be that marriage was a mission. Marriage had, person had a mission in life to get married and he find a partner and he and that partner will build a life together. Now marriage is, for many people, is really a focus on gratification of entitlements. So if the person does not fit my concept of who I'm looking for, I'll pass that person by. I frequently give the concept of airport scanner. You know, you go into the airport and there's a scanner kind of seeing what you have on your body. People look at each other with airport scanners, kind of, does it fit the look that I'm looking for? Does it fit the right, you know, the right size and shape and career and everything else? So the mission of marriage has really taken a back seat to personal preferences.
So, Rabbi Astro, I take two things out of what you're saying so far. One is that, you know, the Wall Street Journal ran a long article last week or 2 weeks ago how marriage in America has declined substantially. 71% of people, I may be off in that number, but it's what I remember, were married, let's say, 50 years ago. And this year, it's in the 40s. So
that's
it's declined by almost 30%. It's an incredible amount.
That's right.
And there's an old expression, you know, avisa kristaltach yudaltach, that we basically absorb, by osmosis from the society around us. So I seem to be hearing from you that the general American lifestyle, which has seeped more and more, I mean, more than ever, we have become, you know, Americans, you know, the hein am levadad yishkein, is the internet, media is sapping it. It's topping the blut of the hein am levadad yishkein. And that is part of the shidduch crisis is, just like the guy doesn't want to get married, the yid also is lepzacha guten tag and doesn't see. It seems that you're saying it's not a statistical thing necessarily, more boys than girls. It's an American problem that has now landed on our doorstep. Is that correct?
I want to give you an astounding statistic. In the past 30 years, 20 years rather, the only time that the number of marriages increased and the number of divorces decreased was during the three-month period after 9/11. The concept of mortality when it hit American life caused a brief pause in the trend that you're now that you're now citing. But the trend has been alive for the past 40 years. And all the predictions that were made 30, 40 years ago are coming to fulfillment now. They're even occurring more rapidly than anyone had ever dreamed. And it's hitting our community in a very powerful and painful way, because others don't feel the pain of not being able to get married as we do. There's also a serious problem of emotional maturity. There's something that I note that in previous Doris, a person who was a Ben Torah was also a person who had struggled with life's challenges. You know, in every Dora that we've lived in, we've always had the challenges of life. The Baruch Hashem, we live in a very affluent society now, and people are infantilized from the day they're born until they're ready to get married. So while they may have accumulated a lot of knowledge and Torah knowledge, they really necessarily have not developed emotionally, and they make the erroneous assumption that they are developed emotionally when they're not. They've been infantilized all through their lives, and this infantilization does not enable them to develop relationships. They see relationships as something that they can buy in a store. Right, like a suit or a pair of shoes,
which is again an American problem.
That's right.
Rabbi Astrow, when people say that the shidduch crisis, quote unquote, is more of a female problem than a male problem, is that true? Because you would think that the boys are just as immature as the girls, and you would think that, you know, just like, you know, the seeping into American culture affects the girls as much as the boys. Why then is there seem to be the word on the street is that it's much more of a problem for girls than boys. Why is that?
No, it's not true at all.
It's not true at all.
If you go into any of the yeshivas where there are older boys, you'll see guys languishing away, having no idea how they're going to develop a relationship. The level of yiush. I mean, today alone I can cite three or four people who came to me today alone who are languishing away and don't know what to do with themselves. They don't have to develop a relationship. Girls are far more developed emotionally than guys. That Chazal always understood that, because girls have to nurture life. They have to bring life into the world and nurture life, and they have these skills. I find that guys develop in marriage. That's how they mature. Girls develop, that's the way Hashem gave them these gifts. So the guys they're kind of quiet about it. But they're suffering as much as the girls. They just don't know what to do. Some of them just kind of give up and walk away and go from one day to the next. Girls feel it more painfully. But I think that on an emotional level, I think guys are suffering to a great extent and are really helpless when it comes to this.
So Rabbi Astrow, when you have organizations that say that it's based on statistics and there's more girls than boys and this and that, your attitude is you don't seem to buy that. You seem to say that both are suffering, except that you hear it more from the girls, because more of the girls are, it pains the girls more not
That's
getting
right.
married.
That's right. I've had discussions with individuals in these organizations. I felt that it was a misuse of resources and misleading the Am into thinking that this is a statistical issue. It's not. It's a life and death issue for every person. We are seeing now, and this is going to grow continuously. Whether we're taking Lakewood or we're taking the Upper West Side, no matter where we go, we're seeing people who have been dating for 20 years and are still not married, and they have not developed the skills to be married. And with every passing date, their ability to get married decreases. And these numbers are increasing by the thousands.
So, Rabbi Astrow, what would you say, how do we as a community, or how can we as individuals, is there anything we can do to help? What can we change? Like, is there a solution to this very, very sad problem?
So I think there are different approaches. The first is we need, you know, the dating coach concept is a big problem, because what's a dating coach? It's a name that has been created that really has there's nothing governing who a dating coach is and what they know. People, there are people though who are very skilled and who are emotionally developed, who can serve to help individuals and couples while they're dating. And individuals and couples while they're dating need an enormous amount of guidance, enormous amount, because, you know, a lot of people have come from very difficult backgrounds. We still have the scars of a lot of a third generation after the Holocaust, and believe me, it still affects people who are dating today, because they were brought up in homes of parents who were survivors. We see that. I see it all the time. There's been a divorce and anxiety and panic issues that we see. So we need people who know how to guide couples who are dating and how to guide singles who need to put their lives in order emotionally to get on with the process of developing mature relationships. We also need to teach young men, particularly young men, more than women, how to develop emotionally in early years of schooling. We're not doing that. We're giving them extraordinary abilities to be B'nai Torah, but without necessarily giving them the ability to develop emotionally. And without that, we're in trouble. We're in, particularly now, where we have, you know, with the burgeoning of iPhones and internet and all the other things, and hats that cost $300-$400 and suits and everything else that makes a person, we see the problem in drinking, we see the problem in smoking, right? These are all reflections of a vacuum that we need to fill immediately with people who are skilled and programs that really can make a difference as a young man and woman grows in the early formative years of life. So when they get ready to date, they are mature people.
So Rabbi Astro, if you could wave a magic wand and say, I think A, B, C should happen, what would it be?
Okay. Number one, I think we need to train a cadre of people who know how to deal with couples who are dating.
So do you think that Rabbanim are qualified or no?
Anybody is qualified as long as they know what they're doing.
So do you think they know what they're doing?
Well, if they've been taught to know what they're doing, yes. And if they haven't been taught, no.
So are you suggesting that we give Rabbanim some type of a program or a class so that they have
well,
the ability to
Well, it's more than a class.
Coach?
It really is. It has to be a sophisticated approach to understanding emotional development and how people build relationships together, how to help people build solid relationships. In the past, it didn't make a difference because once you got a couple together, they stay together. Today, it doesn't work. Today, many people come to see me and who are engaged, and I say, listen, you guys are fighting. If you're going to fight the day after your Sheva Brachas, this marriage will be over, because we have a lot of people. We have a lot of lawyers out there. We have a lot of therapists out there who enable people to have alternatives. We need to develop a serious cadre of people who know what they're doing to help people develop serious relationships that are enduring, that will last a lifetime. That's number one. And number two, we need to get into the schools to enable schools to provide, particularly young boys, how to develop emotionally, how to deal. There's a lot of issues. You know them as well as I do.
But Rabbi Astro, it's too vague. We have to make young boys more aware. I mean, give me some concrete steps. Like, you want to develop a cadre of people to coach. Well, would you suggest that maybe in yeshivas or where they, when somebody gets smicha, it should be attached to it, should be a 5-week course in understanding. Like, give me some concrete things that you would do. Saying, let's make boys smarter.
Sure. I would develop. I'm working with one yeshiva now that has that I'm discussing the possibility of providing them a program to teach adolescent boys of how to understand relationships and how to understand drives, and so that when they get ready to date, they are maturing. So it could be a 5-week program that to give to people who are getting smicha. To get to Rabbanim who have shtelas, certainly, and people
okay.
who are kala teachers and chassan teachers. It's the materials that are helpful are really very helpful. It's not a chaotic situation. There are materials that really enable people to develop relationships and that endure for a lifetime. They do exist. And to be able to give them to our people who serve as more the asras and challah teachers and kosan teachers, it's not a difficult task. It's not a difficult task at all.
Okay.
But it's not being done.
Yeah, you're saying that knowing the halacha alone is not enough to be a rav. I'll tell you a humorous story. They say that a very talented younger man came to a rav. I heard it was Reb Chaim Meiser, but it could have been anybody. And he asked him for smicha on Yeridayas. He spoke to him, and he saw that he knows the halacha very well, but he sensed he doesn't really know the facts very well. So he drew a picture of a cow, and he said, "Younger man, show me where is the mara? Where is the bile?"
Yeah.
So the younger man looked, and he checked. He said, "Maybe by the tail, maybe by the..." He didn't know. He knew the halacha. So they say that Chaim Meiser told him, he says, "Younger man, if you don't know the asra of the mara, how can I make you a mara da asra?" Right? In other words, knowing halacha is not enough. We have to know how to really, you know, really look at the person in a wholesome and in a complete manner. Give me the second. What would be the second thing?
The second.
You said you. If I asked you three things that you would say, I would be misakin A, B, and C. What would they be?
So one would be the. One would be training people out there in the field with some solid programs that really have proven themselves over the years to be helpful to people. Secondly, is to get into the schools and to provide schools with programs that would enable particularly young men. I say that more than women, more than girls, particularly young men to develop, to fill out emotionally, and so that they're not prone to all the kinds of mishigasim that we see today. Thirdly, I think we need, which is related, we also need to teach people about anxiety and panic and things like that, which have a very deleterious effect on dating relationships. We find that a lot of people panic, particularly in engagement. We see a lot of broken engagements, a lot more than we ever. When I was married many, many years ago, I did not know of a single person with a broken engagement. I never heard of it. Engagement was a safe harbor. Once you got there, you were always safe. You were home free. Today, hardly a day goes by where I don't have somebody calling me about an engagement that's in crisis. So we need to help people learn that when they get engaged, to give them the skills to be able to hold on to that engagement and to use that time in a productive way. And that's to be the third thing, because if people see that everybody's breaking their so many broken engagements, it kind of takes away the tom or that sense of security that I can get through this in one piece. So, and that deals with, we have to know how to deal with anxiety and panic, and a lot of OCD stuff affects relationships. So we have to be really mumchim. We have to help people become mumchim to help other people develop these relationships and build lives that last a lifetime together.
So, Rabbi Astrow, in closing, you're saying that it's the issues that we are having, and the reason why we are having issues with both older singles, quote unquote, shidduch crisis, is a reflection of the
and younger and younger single and younger singles and younger.
What do you mean, and younger?
21, 22, 23. Not just older.
Okay, is because we are basically have, through osmosis, absorbed a lot of the societal issues, which are, like you said, you know, a certain amount of selfishness, a certain amount of being able to build a life without a marriage, build a very wholesome and enjoyable life, not seeing the commitment of marriage, the beauty of having children, the beauty of a family as a valued a deterioration. Now we're seeing it as a value, as a you know, something to aspire to, and that has crept in, and that has caused people to sort of shy away, both boys and girls.
And beyond that, not knowing how to get past things like anxiety and panic and fears that are a part of a personality, which we need to help them get past. And and also how to get beyond the kinds of distractions that society has thrown in front of us, whether it comes to drinking, whether it comes to the way people dress, or whether they smoke and what they're smoking, all these other things that are become a part of from life, which undermine the core of who Hashem wants us to be.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Shai Astro, for sharing your time with us.